Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 55 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. Our Saturday newsletter from Outlander Stars, which this week seemed to feature the Jacobite Rebellion, which is good because I think there were a lot of questions after last week's episode.
Last week's episode did a little bit. I think it was the first time for the viewer, especially someone who has no background knowledge of anything Jacobite, anything Scottish, etc., any Scottish history. It definitely brought home the meaning, the true meaning of what Culloden really was.
Absolutely. I think for a casual watcher who's not familiar with the historical importance of this time period, I think it was important to put more information out there because, you know, I think that they did a good job with the backstory, a little bit of the backstory of Culloden and the Jacobite Rebellion and everything. But even that, I think they for the casual viewer, like I said, who hasn't read the books, it's probably a little bit more information for them, which they probably appreciated. Mm-hmm. We also got a new Hey Lassie, which this week was a very, I don't know,
rugged.
That was
dirty.
Very, but it's Jamie, of course. And it says, "Hey Lassie, want to watch me play Shinty?" Be like, "Hell yes, I want to watch you play Shinty." We got another behind the scenes photo. This is at Castle Leoch. And you can see Letitia and Colm sitting at a table somewhere. I'm not sure. Is this the gathering, you think?
It might be.
No, he still has a beard. It's not the gathering.
Maybe so the way out.
Maybe.
The way out when he comes in and they sit down and before the bard starts.
Very possible. We also got a new shot of our favorite Scottish lady, Miss Fitz, in her finery.
This is the best person cast, like, in the entire show.
Seriously.
I mean,
well, I think what's important for me to say that about that is they are all well cast, but
she was from my brain.
She is from my brain because she was cast based in when she was cast, I went, of course. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other people, I might have been like, that's not really who I saw. But as the course of the show has gone on, they've become that character.
Yes.
For me. So Claire, but she was cast purely out of my brain and yours.
When I saw Katrina, like I said, it was a punch in my gut. It was an emotional reaction. I never had it. When I saw Jimmy, I was like, oh, he's kind of cute, right? I can totally see that. Mrs. Fitz was like, duh. But Katrina was, again, punch in my gut. Solar plexus, probably.
So much aggression.
No, love and appreciation.
We also got a shot.
BJR style.
Whoa.
Hey.
You shouldn't do anything BJR style. To I know. We also got a shot of putting the gentleman up on the St. Andrew's Cross.
On the big X.
On the big X. That marks the spot where the traitors are hung.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all in their puffy coats, so you know it's cold. And you know it's behind the scenes. Because if there's a puffy coat, it's not an official photo.
It may be an official Instagram photo.
Agreed.
Oh, sorry. An Instagram photo of the official Outlander Stars Instagram account.
Yes. So we also had what I would probably say is the most epic Q&A on Twitter.
Best one ever.
Now, she says best, but we all know she's biased.
Just 100% biased.
More than 100. Come on.
150.
Seriously, though.
There's no more.
The obsession is complete. He was so lovely.
And random.
And oh, yeah.
I loved it.
And that's you know, honestly, that's one of the things that I noticed when we interviewed him.
He was, yeah.
In Los Angeles. And also when he was on stage at the premiere, when he mm-hmm. was talking, it was just because he plays these characters that are so stiff upper lip and very, you know, closed off and bad people and all the things he does for Frank and Black Jack Randall, you don't expect the comedy and you don't expect the lightheartedness and the smiles and the cheekiness. So those are always something that I appreciate and admire when they come through because he's such a good actor that I don't think he has that in him.
Yeah.
Like, for me to find the lightness in Tobias after
was
this week's
needed.
This week's episode and was very needed.
Appreciated, yeah.
To be reminded that he's not just a total a-hole. Because he was really, really good at being an a-hole. And we'll get into that later. But if you want to see a transcript of the Q&A, I know several sites have it. I know I saw it on Outlander TV News' website.
But also, I think Erin Conrad of 3 If by Space, they also do one. So
she's so good at that. She's like dedicated.
And I've noticed actually more sites are doing those. And actually Starz now has their own that they put up in some kind of YouTube form. I don't know if it's just they like make a screenshot movie of all the tweets. I don't know. But basically his timeline, I guess.
I'll check it out. So that is about this week in a nutshell as far as announcements are concerned. So we should take this time to move on to this week's episodic discussion of episode 106, The Garrison Commander.
So I hear we have a little episode to discuss tonight.
I would hesitate to refer to this as a little episode.
Oh my gosh, no way.
This was like, there was so much going on.
This is the big turnaround.
It is, but it's a setup episode, but it's also, you know, character revelations and some really horrific, gory scenes that I literally had to cover up the screen with my hand.
And that's funny. It's not that I found them beautiful or not upsetting. I was,
don't you dare quote Blackjack Randall right now by calling it, like, beautiful.
I'm saying, not that I found it beautiful, and not that I didn't find it upsetting and gruesome, but I, after hearing kind of the press saying, you know, this and this, that and that, like, the flesh hanging off of him, and I was just, like, ready to be destroyed with this gruesomeness. And again, it wasn't beautiful, like he said. It wasn't wondrous to look upon, but I had absolutely no problem watching. I didn't look away once. I was agog and aghast. Is Marius in Love at Last?
Oh, okay. No more Les Mis.
There is
that
actually.
That won't be the first Les Mis reference we make tonight.
And there's going to be at least right one now. More. Oh, I just thought of another one. So since the time, I think it was, I guess, two episodes ago, or now three episodes ago, The Gathering, when we had Diana.
Yes.
Since I know it wasn't obvious necessarily when you started, and some people may have recognized it if they really had keen observational skills, but definitely it was much easier to catch on a second watch. But in the opening credits, they seem to be showing things that are kind of related to what may come up later in the episode. So now I'm doing my best to keep an eye on the end of the opening credits after missing a few things before. And this time it was an officer's uniform and a sword and a shaving brush and bowl and the razor.
But what I noticed was the music, or lack thereof. Yeah. It was just the drums, which was very evocative of like a military drum line.
Mm-hmm.
But I did notice the second time through about that. And they did do the close-up on the razor, which, you know, comes in later. I think with such a cliffhanger from last week that it was so nice that they started literally right where they left off.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it would have been kind of, not cheating, but it would have been like an ugh if they'd come back and then just had them in some other place like they've done with the previous episodes where it's not immediately following where the previous episode left off, you know, time passage and whatnot. So it was nice that they picked up right where they left off considering how much of a cliffhanger they left us with.
I thought it was kind of funny that she does say in the end that she's a guest of the Mackenzies, but she does not look too convincing. And she keeps looking back and forth at them. And I'm like, girl, you're not helping your case. Just, I mean, if you're going to say it, own it. But her looking back and forth was, to me, just a little, would have looked to the British suspicious. But Lieutenant Cutie, a.k.a. Jeremy Foster, a.k.a. Tom Brittany, insists that she go with him anyway. So apparently he bought it, but who knows if he actually bought it. And he wanted to take her to his commander, who was stationed at the inn in Brockton.
And I will say that Lieutenant Cutie, as you have so named him, is for sure, like, the most, well, he is cute. I'm not saying he's not cute. I'm just going to say he's the most genteel of all of the English soldiers we encounter. He has literally the best manners. He's the least of an a-hole of all of the other British officers that we meet in this episode.
That is true.
Like, he at least tries to have some diplomacy about the whole thing. And I don't know if it's because he's secretly thinking Claire's kind of good looking or if he's trying to get on her good side. But I appreciated the fact that he was ultimately the only, one of the few good guys in the scene.
So I know we're not keeping tallies, but we
could.
We what do we try to mention, for our own sake, when we notice something has veered slightly or definitely from the book. And the difference here in the book, of course, is that she ends up at the same place, but Dougal takes her there for an appointment, right?
or because he takes her there.
Well, in the book, but here, he planned to bring her there because he wanted to know whether or not she was a spy. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways he was going to find that out was to basically reintroduce her to the English soldiers and find out what goes down.
And in the series, of course, they're met at that at the river, mm-hmm. when she's washing, by Lieutenant Cutie and his cohorts. And then they're escorted back to the inn. But they did what they needed to do. They did what they needed to do to be able to have her have an out later on, which was have Dougal basically force him, not force himself, but make sure he was part of that party that was riding away.
Yes.
I liked the voiceover, but she's surrounded by her own people, and she's kind of remembering her time in the war and saying that even though it's not the same time, I'm still around people from the army. She says, it was nice to be looked upon with sympathy and respect instead of hostility and suspicion. And I thought, you're a little bit naive there, my dear. I'm not saying Lieutenant Cutie has anything bad toward her, but she goes into this whole... That's one thing, that she goes into this entire thing naively, and she comes out of it wounded and unencumbered by
naivete. I fully agree with what you're saying. However, had BJR not showed up at the inn and steered the conversation in a direction he wanted it to go, she would have been on the road to Inverness. The steps that she'd taken towards getting her passage back to Inverness, she would have been on the road to Inverness with Lieutenant Cutie.
I really felt bad for Dougal on the ride. I got flashes of the AMC series Turn about Revolutionary Era America and the British soldiers quartering with the colonists, being able to basically come in and say, look, we have, you know, X number of soldiers, how many can you keep in your home for just to live? And I'm not saying this is exactly what happened there, but just basically the word that they used, she actually used.
Occupying.
Yeah, occupying forces. When they get to the inn and they go upstairs, only thing I wrote was, they don't even pretend to be like the book in this. So it was entertaining. I like the addition of it. It was very entertaining.
Well, back to what you were saying about Dougal, I did also feel bad for him because he was basically an enemy on his own land. Like, he mm-hmm. felt like he was in enemy territory in his own land. And I was like, I can't imagine what that would feel like to, like, basically go into your house mm-hmm. and know that there's a place in your house that you're not safe and is, you know, you're surrounded by people that you know, wish ill of you or that you just have no control over and you just kind of are in this out of control space.
I will not sing it, but I did think as soon as she was escorted up to that room and we saw right away it was not going to be like the book. I wrote, there's a party going on right here. Because we are book lovers. I wouldn't say we're purists because we appreciate that adaptation for what it is. However, we cannot help but compare. Good or bad, doesn't matter. Usually all good. First of all, of course, the way they got there was different. But at least Dougal was there. That needed to be in place. Yes. But once they got there and they went upstairs to the room, I mean, it was like... Dang, it was like the nicest living room or dining room, actually. I'm like, dang, they went all out. And that was like a 5-course meal. It was, everyone's in like their best dress. No, for sure.
And it's like, well, best dress. They're all in uniform.
In uniform.
But I just was like, wow, there's a table full of characters I've never heard of before.
Exactly.
And the whole scene is being led by an a-hole.
John Heffernan.
Is that the actor?
Yes.
Okay, because it was Lord Thomas, wasn't it?
It was Brigadier General Sir Oliver Lord Thomas.
Okay,
Knight that's right. of the Bath and commanding officer of the British Army.
But still a douche. And I want you to know that I could tell by the way he welcomed Claire that he was ultimately going to be a douche.
But if Dougal hadn't been there and she would have probably kept her mouth shut and played along, she would have gotten to Inverness and the douche would have escorted her there.
Well, here's the thing. Had Dougal not been there, mm-hmm. he would not have shown his douchebaggery colors quite so early.
And if he weren't there and Randall had shown up, she would have been in trouble. She wouldn't have gotten out.
Obviously. Because he came to her rescue. Mm-hmm. I said, it started off well. Like, everything started off well. They had the harpsichord montage mm-hmm. where the harpsichord played and music, and it was, like, probably a cello as well. And she's retelling her tales of Highland woes to these English officers, and then the door opens.
I wrote, am I hearing correctly, Lieutenant?
Yes, that's correct.
And I did look it up, and yes, apparently all English-speaking countries outside of the U.S., I don't know about Canada, but outside of the U.S., that's how it's pronounced.
It is.
And I was like, okay, you go on with your bad self. Yeah. I always wondered why that was so, and I did look it up. I'm not going to go into it because it's kind of convoluted, but basically it has to do with beginning from the Latin, and the Americans take it from the French, and that's why it's slightly pronounced differently, but
I always blame the French.
And he mentions the claret bottle in 35, and I wrote, I wonder what happened in 35. Maybe we'll look that up later on.
So well, I was just thinking to myself, like, how old he must be and how old he was and whether or not he had anything to do with it or if he just bought it in 35. Mm. I mean, it was such a specific time.
That's what I'm wondering. If I know there were many... Frank says that there are actually, depending on the person classifying it, there were supposedly up to as many as 4 Jacobite rebellions. I wonder if one of those was in 35. I know one was in 15.
So what I meant to say earlier, but I didn't because I got distracted with my own thoughts, was that it started off well, but then the English started treating Dougal poorly.
Exactly. And Dougal is described as, quote, a fine specimen of the local inhabitants. I mean, that's just... I don't even know how far away from, like, you could take it there. You know what I mean? I don't even want to say anymore. Put it this way. It doesn't matter what color your skin is. You can be talked about as if you were less than human. Period.
Oh, and he called him a creature. Like, yeah. It started off well, yeah. And he was like, well, you certainly look the part. And I was like, oh, well, that was kind of nice. Like, oh, war so chieftain. Too. And then he was like, oh, I couldn't understand a word that creature said. And I was like, oh, really?
They mock his look, his speech, and the general who... Maybe he could have been totally taking the piss, right? Saying, I didn't understand what you said, but later on...
No, he made it very clear. And the thing that made it clear to me was when he was like, that woolen skirt you wear. And he was like, it's called a kilt. And he's like, I know very well what that is.
Dougal, simmer down now. It's not going to help anyone, let alone yourself or Claire, if you get in trouble. Because if something happens to you, she has no way out.
Agreed, but for the... In his defense, he's not really inciting anything. He is just basically defending himself and being on the defense.
There is a difference, though, in his situation. Defending yourself and then going on the offense. Talking about it would be
maybe
great.
Maybe he should have stayed in London.
Exactly. That he didn't have to say that. But
though he was being just offended constantly. They were like, you know, you don't even understand you. And they're like, oh, it would be better if everyone spoke the same way that
before
they do in London.
Before Dougal says, are you trying to embarrass the lass? Are you just an arrogant wee? I listened to it a few times. I couldn't figure out what it was. So if someone heard that or has a copy of the script, please let us know. But did your jaw, like, drop when the general says, so tell me, from one lerd to another?
I could very clearly tell that I was supposed to be offended on his behalf. I'm not going to lie.
I was like, crap.
I was offended because I was like, oh, come on. Like, and this whole scene was fraught with, like, awkward silences and, and meaningful stares and poor Claire in the middle of it all just being like, oh, I don't know what
Claire
I'm supposed to do. I want to go back to Inverness, but I'm an underdog fighter.
She's avoiding all eye contact.
Right.
She kind of... glances a little side, but she's not, like, moving her head. She's trying to, like, kind of lay low, even though she's obviously can't. She's the English rose in the room, so she can't really lay low.
Though I will say that definitely an underappreciated, uncredited character in this episode was her heaving bosom. It was distracting. Like, is this one of the first...
the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. This is one of the first episodes that she's had, like, her décolletage.
Totally uncovered.
Uncovered. So every time she would, like, get incensed or something would go on, like... it was just like pulsating out of her cleavage. I was like, good lord, lady.
The general does seem rather taken with her. But again, men stationed in the outback or in the boonies, it's not that there aren't women around. There are, but there aren't English women around. And so that is a little bit more, of course, reminiscent of home.
Definitely a delicacy.
Okay, or that. And this is where you said, oh, and then I wrote, Dougal goes downstairs. And now, finally, they brought us to the place where in the book, something starts, but we have no Randall. And this is what you're saying, the harpsichord plays.
Yeah.
And it sets the scene of, it makes me think of, you know, obviously it's classical music, literally the classical period. The harpsichord music is just, it just evokes refinement.
It does, which is
society.
Super ironic coming off of his line where he says, how are we ever to make peace with such an ill-mannered people? And he was just a huge douchebag the entire scene. And I wrote, hello, Pop, this is Kettle, you're black.
They go to a new version of the scene, I guess, and you can tell that she's already finished her tale. And she drinks yet more wine. And then the door opens, and I wrote, and look who the cat drug
and,
in.
And see, what I heard
and
in my
he was
head...
hilarious.
Wait for it. What I heard in my head was like a record scratch. Like, went from the music to like... that's what I heard. I was like, cue the record scratch.
And...
Dun, dun,
okay.
Dun,
we know he's awful. We're not making any...
I agree.
But this was
hilarious.
As funny as heck. He comes in, and his line, oh, well, we must protect the claret. He really is someone outside of being the arse nut that he is. I think he would, no, not that I would want to hang out with him, but as far as a guy and a buddy, if he can do that, he would be as funny as heck. He would be enjoyable, at least.
Just don't offer him claret. He doesn't care for it.
Oh, I thought you said don't offer him claret. Or that. Yeah. So I wrote, but what an ours. He's told to, like, you know, clean himself off from his journey or from his day. So he goes to the door, opens the door, stands in the doorway, and, like, makes a huge show of kicking the whatever, dust off of his boots, like, making a huge racket.
Like, stomping, beating his clothes.
And he looks at the general the entire time, like, look what I'm doing.
But what's important is what happened before that was that as he's on his way out, he sees Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you. And they have this whole little interchange. And then he's like, I'm staying. I'm like, if I'm going to if I have to protect your claret to stay, that's what's going to happen. I'm going to beat my shoes at the door and clean my clothing off.
And then, yeah, so he recognizes her before he goes to the doorway. And I wrote, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, bad guy or not, Randall looks fine. I am loving that wig on Tobias. Holy monkey balls.
Well, I was going to say that, you
was
know,
he
I mean,
looking?
He, no, yes.
Thank you.
And I say that with the caveat that I'm not saying that I do not find Tobias Menzies attractive.
Yeah.
I do. However, I am fully on Team Sam, Team Jamie.
I hear you.
But Tobias looked really, really effing hot in this episode.
Thank you. That's all I'm saying.
That's all
it's not
say.
That he doesn't look good as Frank. He looks fine as Frank. But holy balls, when he has that wig on and the uniform, are you kidding me?
No, way hotter.
Summer?
Way hotter as
Black.
I hate that I say this, but he was super hotter as Blackjack than he was as Frank.
Oh, hello.
It's shameful.
I'm
almost ashamed of myself.
Have you ever watched? No, dude, join the club.
I don't want to.
He's a hottie.
I don't want
to. So have you ever seen House of Cards?
No.
Okay, so in case anyone listening has seen House of Cards, Kevin Spacey plays Frank Underwood, who's a very smarmy guy. Not quite a Blackjack Randall, but, you know, he's a 21st century smarmy man. He can do his own shiz, but he also has a lot of people to do his shiz for him. I am not necessarily, now, I do find Tobias good looking, but I'm not necessarily, I don't necessarily find Kevin Spacey, I don't think he's bad looking, but I don't necessarily think of him as, oh my goodness, he's like a Greek god. However, in House of Cards, his magnetism, and he's a bad guy, or bad boy, I should say, his magnetism is off the charts. And I've chatted about this with a friend, and friend who is, I think, a listener, will be listening, you know who you are. We've had a conversation about this offline. And that is that, I think she told me, I think you like the bad guys. I'm like, I don't think I like the bad guys, I just, it's weird that, like, I'm not necessarily, I don't think he's bad looking at all, but I'm not necessarily all that into Kevin Spacey in that way.
No, I think you're attracted to the confidence thing, dude.
Hello, Kitty!
And I think that must be the confidence level, because I can see that, I have never seen an episode of House of Cards, but I have seen clips of House of Cards, and I can see what you're saying. You're obviously drawn to powerful men who are highly confident.
And who are
arseholes. A little bit of arseholes, yes.
I don't want to admit that, but I guess I just did. So anyway, if you haven't seen that, check it out, because wow. So yeah, so Summer admitted, and I wasn't trying to, you know, trick you into anything. I'm just glad you agree. Arsenet or not, he looks really good in that uniform and in that wig and whatever makeup they have on him. He looks really, really good.
I did think it was funny when the commander suggested that perhaps Captain Randall should escort Claire to Inverness. And I was like, worst idea ever.
Well, I think you may have, I don't know if we had a chance to see enough of Randall, like only Randall, or enough of Randall in one long scene or in a few minutes at a time. In the time that we saw him, whether it was with her in the very beginning or the flashback at Lallybroch where he beats Jamie, right? I don't think we've seen enough of him to see some of his, I don't want to say tics, but to see some of his things. He has the busiest mouth ever. It's almost like he's got some chewing tobacco in there, but we know he doesn't.
He looked like he was chewing gum.
Or something.
Episode.
I don't think it's nervous. It's just, it's his character
his
thing. I wrote, was he chewing the inside of his lip? It was almost like he was chewing on something. And I wrote, it's very character of him. And it's another way besides his posture and carriage. Completely different from Frank. Completely. Which is awesome.
Well, the one thing I will say that they have in common, Frank and Blackjack, is they need to blow their nose. Like, I feel like they're constantly going,
Like they're allergic to something in Scotland. I don't know.
Maybe because we just watched this episode. As far as Randall goes, I agree. I thought it was kind of like a character thing. But did Frank do that a lot?
Yeah.
Okay. They both. Like, I guess it's a Tobias thing. Or it was a choice and it was something that characters have in common.
Possibly. I also thought it was interesting to see Blackjack as a subordinate. Because you never see him as a subordinate to anyone.
That's very interesting.
And to see him basically have to kowtow to...
I don't know about that. He didn't have a lot of respect for that guy.
No, he didn't. But
he had to fake it.
All of his most disrespectful things he did toward that character were done when he wasn't there. I'm just saying. It was interesting to see him toe the line.
Everyone has to report to someone.
I loved the whole scene when they brought up the English officer who was massacred or killed by the people. And she was like, oh, well, it sounds like a prank. And they were like, he was cradling his severed head. And I was like,
Total flashback to the dinner at Leah. She's like, I saw you playing with your son. My son? My this what? Just, like, again, seriously. record stops.
Yeah, awkward.
Awkward. Going back a tiny bit, but when he first sees that, the recognition of her before he goes and fakes dusting himself off in that doorway, she says something. He's like, he's got nothing but eyes for her at that point. Yeah, I wonder what he's thinking. And he says, charmed. The one with all. That's all. Not your servant, Mom, or anything like that. But I was just like, man.
Well, he also said something in the scene, and I can't remember what led up to it, but he says, if I am wrong, I apologize. And I said, that is the worst non-apology ever.
So basically, we can go around saying whatever the hell we want and say, if I'm wrong, I'm sorry.
Right. I was like, that is like the worst apology, non-apology ever.
That would be
ever.
Pretty awesome. That means you can say whatever the heck you want and never blamed.
No, it's like in the South, where you can say anything you want and follow it with, bless him. Oh, bless her heart.
Bless her heart, exactly.
You could be like, oh, she's got a funky left eye, bless her heart.
So Randall accuses the Mackenzie. This is when he starts doing his whole spiel now. To me, all he has to do, and I think he knows it, is accuse her of something or accuse the Mackenzie of something and just kind of put some shadiness to her character. And he does it very quickly and very easily, and it gets her gander up. And she, and he maybe didn't even know this, except that it does play into what he's trying to do, which is to discredit her. She shows her true colors.
Oh, he played her like a fiddle. Like, so
again, what did I say at the beginning? She walks in naive.
Well, she can't fathom why anyone would discredit her, what they could gain from it. She doesn't understand that he's a sadist. He's trying to see how he can use her, and that comes up later. He's already come across her, and he's already predisposed to think, this is weird. This is a random English lady in the middle of Scotland who I found in dirty, half-naked, and then shortly after finding her, when I tried to rape her, I was brained by a Scot.
And he does bring that up, which is fair. So, his whole plan is to get her gander up, and like you said, play her like a fiddle. She does all the work.
Oh, for sure. He did almost nothing. He just,
and
like...
Because she's a puppet master. She is naive.
She should That's have assumed she's... he was out to get her. She should have assumed.
She should have. If it were the two of them, she probably would have been more defensive or more scared or more whatever. But because she was around all the other guys who had treated her very nicely up until this point, I think she thought, I'm safe right now. So... he can do whatever, and I can say whatever,
the
and I'm just going to go.
The whole episode she feels that way, until she comes back from the amputation and finds herself alone.
But then, when he brings up the fact that the general says something like, Madam, I think you have...
Don't you mean the King's Lamb?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't you mean the King's Lamb? She does all of this herself. Oh, she totally walked right into it. Like I said, he played her like a fiddle this whole episode. He's like, you hang out with the Scots, you've been living with them for how many weeks now? Mm-hmm. There must be something else going on here that nobody else here knows. And you're not just some English lady hanging out with these Scots people.
Something I wondered. We know they've already made some changes from the book, right? Got it.
None. They made no changes.
We're with them. And we know that they have to get Randall and Claire alone, because that's the only way something like the book that needs to happen will happen.
He won't reveal himself in a room full of people, let's be honest.
He won't also punch her in a room full of people.
He's not going to show his ugly in front of a room full of his...
So that's exactly what I said. Yes. They needed some device to get everybody else out. And so that, to me...
Cue the amputation scene.
The device was the attack. Everyone comes down, and they're going to do whatever. And then she leaves, which makes perfect sense that she would want to help medically... But they could have had the exact same scene happen with, oh my gosh, there was an attack. everybody leaves except Randall for some reason.
No, that wouldn't have worked as well, I don't think. And I think because...
But why do they have to bring someone who's injured back to the end? That's what I'm thinking. They didn't need it. It makes it easy for her to get out of the room, too. It gives her a purpose.
But if that's where they're stationed and that's the closest place, there's no reason they wouldn't go back there. That's the place to take them. That's where the surgeon was supposed to be. He just was not there at that moment. And he showed up right as Claire was about
to
hack his arm off with a sharpened
sword. I'm not saying bring him somewhere else. I'm saying why have someone come at all? Because stationed there, who cares if they're stationed there?
Well, they were obviously there to clear the room, first of all.
Exactly.
Clear the room for sure. And then once she went down, because you know if they brought somebody back who needed tending to, she would leave.
And that's not what I'm asking.
But it also gave everyone the reason to go out and look for the rebels that caused the injury, which cleared the room out even further.
There were already people dead. They did not need an injury to get people to leave. I am agreeing with you.
Okay.
They did not leave because of the injury. They left because of the attack.
Correct.
She may have gone down.
You know why she went down?
She went down to help out with the injury. But they didn't say that there was an injury at first. They said there were deaths. They didn't say, we're bringing someone downstairs. My point is, it was definitely a device to clear the room.
Yes.
Past that, I can't find a need for her to have left the room. Necessarily. Or for definitely, there was no need that I can see to have someone injured being brought back. I'm just saying. They didn't have to do that. It was a convenient way for her to get out. And then, since everyone's gone, she's like, okay, I'm going to go up here and wait. And then, shabam, she's alone with Randall.
I agree with you, but I think that it worked better that way because then she went back to the room expecting to be back with that room of people where she was safe. And then found herself basically alone with Randall. I think that that's the whole purpose. They cleared the room out. Mm-hmm. And this way it was more of a, it set her immediately on edge. Like she walked in the room and went, oh, this is not what I was expecting. So now I'm
well, I definitely think that
I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
I definitely think that in order to use the kind of flashback they did with the razor and the shaving, it makes sense. I mean, obviously, the flashback does not make sense without the scene of Randall being shaved. I get it. But there didn't have to be a flashback. There didn't have to be any kind of shaving. All I'm saying is the only thing that needed to happen, I'm not saying what happened was bad. The only thing that was absolutely needed was some device to get that room to clear. That's all.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but it would have been weird had everyone left the room except Randall and her. That would have been strange. She would have left with everyone else.
I don't disagree with that part, but Randall just got back from somewhere. What I don't understand is, and this is, I agree with this, what I don't understand is why he felt the need to, like, say, la-di-da, you guys go take that, I'm gonna get a shave. He just, I don't think he gave a rat's.
I mean, I think he's like, yeah, I'll take care of it. I'm good.
Because they didn't say anything about Randall used to hear. They never gave him direction.
Well, not that we saw.
We
don't, but there's a whole bunch of stuff that happened off screen.
But we can't discuss it because we don't know about it.
But we didn't see them all make the decision to go off after the rebels. That was just something that was implied to us later.
I think we both agree the only 100% necessary device was something to have the room cleared.
Agreed.
She did not need to leave.
No, she didn't. It works nicely. But it's like I said, they have a requisite scene every episode of her healing someone or doing something medical.
That I had not thought of. And I think I think you're right. They have it at least once an episode. I will go with that. So that I could believe. But that is something that the production or Ron has said, okay, that one time. It doesn't have to be like a huge thing. It can be an herbal concoction.
It can be a splinter.
It can be a love potion.
Right.
At least one time an episode we have to have her do something like that. I could believe that. But the only thing that had to happen was that room had to be cleared. That's the only thing. Whether she went out and came back or whether she stayed.
I think it was interesting. Like twofold in every episode, they need to have her do something medical because she's a doctor. A nurse right now. She's a nurse.
Don't fucking give away spoilers, Shama.
Sorry. So she's a nurse. So they have to have her doing something doctory medical in every episode.
Nursey?
So they used Claire's nurses. So they used the rebels and the dude being shot and whatnot as their... They used it so they could do their... Hey, look, she does medicine, mm-hmm. and also we're going to clear the room. They use them, I think, in tandem to get that done.
Well, the room definitely, and if it is their goal to do that at least once an episode, then that obviously fits.
Yes. And
what we don't know is, will this come... I would say, I don't think it would come back to haunt her in any way, but if anything, she's ingratiating herself to the English.
Dude, it came back to haunt her immediately. Like...
What, her helping?
No, everything she did in this episode immediately came back to haunt her.
Except her helping the soldier.
With the exception. He'll probably die later, and then they'll be like, oh, well, they don't she's care. A terrible He's, nurse.
The point is, this... I don't see how this could come back to hurt her.
We'll see.
She was only trying to help.
Well, I agree.
Dougal wouldn't get after her though, for trying to help someone. Though, to be
honest, everything she does is her only trying to help, and it usually backfires.
But, okay, we can agree on this. Outside of her helping that soldier, which was definitely instinct and knowledge and ability, etc., homegirl was so naive.
Oh, so, no, absolutely.
She's not stupid, but she... But put it this way, after this, I mean, more stuff happens, yes. More stuff happens. But, I mean, in future episodes, in the book. But, this is her first, honestly, after the whole thing of her going, what the F, when she first came through the stones, like, mm-hmm. holy crap, I have to find myself a way to establish myself as something here.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that first shock and then her journey...
Yeah.
This is the biggest wake-up she's had.
Oh, for sure. Oh, and that comes up later. But let's go back to the amputation, because what I want to say about the amputation is this was the first time in the episode that I literally had to look away from the screen.
Really?
You know, and it was like, and it was the lead-up to it that was almost worse than the actual amputation, because it was like...
Oh, I did...
The guy shows up and he's like, I just sharpened this morning. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's going to hack his arm off with the broadsword. And then randomly...
Just a sword.
Whatever kind of sword it was. Then the surgeon actually arrives and pulls out a hacksaw, which was even worse. And let's also point out the fact, he puts this big wooden thing in the dude's mouth and he's like, bite on it till your teeth crack. And mm-hmm. I thought for sure that they were going to include that sound, but I'm so glad they didn't, because that bothered me on so many levels.
I'm fine watching blood. I'm fine watching whatever. I could watch the flogging, no problem. I mean, I had a problem because it wasn't fun. I knew, because I care for Jamie's character. But as far as the gruesomeness, I did not have to look away. However, the one thing, I'm loquacious, so I'm a verbal processor, so I listen, I speak a lot, but I also listen a lot. I do a lot of things. I'm a very auditory person, so I can watch a lot of stuff, but when it came time, or the saw to be sawing that bone, that made me, like, cringe. That sound, whatever it was. Oh my gosh, I know, but ugh. I did like how, this is another common theme, because of her experience we know, she called Jamie Soldier. In the second episode, I believe. Well, first episode.
And she calls... On your whole soldier.
Uh-huh. And she calls this young man soldier as well. So it's something that she falls back into her role as a combat nurse.
Right. However, later in the episode, she calls Jamie a Highland boy. Oh, yes. And I was like, really? A boy? I've seen him. He's no boy.
Everyone's gone, right? The room is conveniently empty. And a bloodied Claire, at least her arms and hands, returns upstairs to where Randall is being shaved by...
Corporal Hawkins.
By Corporal... And that's the same name. I was just so happy. By the young soldier.
Though I will say he was much more of an adult than he was in the book. He was like, sorry. On my life.
So the razor...
Like, that was the worst saying you could ever give to BJR. Oh, on Lord. My life. You want to put this on your life? Let's do it.
So the razor is very old. And, well, sorry, when Frank has it, it's very old.
Well, yeah, I was like, cue the Frank flashback. Because he's shaving and then all of a sudden they flashback to... Flash forward. To friend
her back.
I know.
Her back.
Her forward. Oh, her back there forward.
Yes.
Oh my god, this is confusing. I watched this episode a couple times, and the first time through I was like, oh, it's just shaving and shaving. Second time through I was like, wait, is that the same blade? And the third time through I was like, it is the same blade! It took me a couple times. And I know he said it was like a 20-year-old blade, but I still didn't make that connection until I went back through later and looked at the blade, and I was like, it is the same.
And it's also the same blade that was in the opening credits.
Word.
So when they switch places and Randall is showing him basically how to not cut someone and shave, he says to him, I think this is very interesting, I kind of put a winky face after this, you control your nerves. Your nerves do not control you, says Randall. And then I wrote, unless it's Jamie. Because Jamie makes him all kinds of Twitter-pated. Makes him go cray-cray.
Jamie makes me all kinds of Twitter-pated. FTR. And that means for the record.
Now, finally, the scene begins. This is where the book is. We've taken 40 minutes or 35 minutes to get here.
It was not that long. Whole scene was like a good third of the episode. Like, just the two of them in the room.
That's 20 minutes. And then the very end was like 5 or 7. So even if that's 27, that still leaves you 20-something minutes.
Stop nerding out on me.
I'm just not having nerding a conversation. Out. I'm just talking about it's you math, are. Girl.
Your math so, is making me, like, not it. Be happy right now.
But it was from the moment that the shaving scene ends.
Yes.
It's at least a half an hour, if not more.
I will have to go back and look. I will not That's confirm fine. Or deny that.
I will confirm it. So basically, once the thing
she always
starts,
does.
Once the thing starts, I wrote, now the scene begins, finally we can get there.
No, it does.
His posture... Totally different.
It is, but it isn't.
The posture or the scene?
The scene. His mannerisms, because, again, I still see him playing her like a fiddle.
Oh, 100%. At this point.
For instance, like, she walks in the room, the whole knife, razor thing happens, he sends the corporal away, says, see that we're not disturbed.
Yep.
Which can only mean bad things, FYI, where BJR is concerned. See that we're not concerned. He walks over. Pours dude's claret out the window, drops the bottle, says, I'm sure you noticed he's an utter ass. So he's already Which setting the scene with saying, I am insubordinate. I yeah. don't find him to be my actual, like,
Equal.
Commander.
Equal.
He's a fop. I do not take him seriously.
Yeah.
And then we follow that with an apology. He apologizes for how he treated her the last time they saw each other, where, you know, the almost rape scene.
Again,
where
he's buttering, like, her up.
Exactly. He is setting this whole scene to try to lead her down a specific path to make her think that what's going to happen is what's going to happen. Like, to make her think that she's on this path of redemption.
Make her feel safe.
And make her feel safe. Absolutely.
What he says is, I look forward to the opportunity to reveal my true nature to you.
Hmm.
And then...
And I thought that can't end well.
No. And then she, of course, takes that as, oh, he's wanting to let me know stuff. Or he wants
she
to
is,
share with
but
me.
But the problem that something. I find with Claire at this point is that she is desperately looking for signs of Frank.
Exactly. And that is something that I had to remind myself. Because, okay, skipping ahead a tiny bit. When he goes off and starts talking about the vlogging, and then we come back and the camera comes back to her... Her face is swollen and covered in tears. And you're like, what the hell? I mean, it's sad, but girl, you don't know him. It has almost nothing to do with Jamie and everything to do with Frank. And
Forget
I was like,
that. It
kick
has nothing
me.
To do.
Kick me in
it
the gut.
It has nothing to do with...
She is dying
it
here.
It has nothing to do with Blackjack.
No.
It has nothing to do with him. It has everything to do with the person that's not even there. Not even in that
that's
time
what I'm
period.
Saying.
Not even born yet.
It's not Jamie.
No, I agree.
I would say it does actually have to do with Blackjack, but she's not crying because... Some man named Blackjack Randall or named Jack Randall is telling her something really bad. She is crying because this person's words and this reality that's coming to her, the story that's a recounting of a true bad thing, are coming out of the mouth of a mask of her husband.
Oh, and it's devastating
and
to her.
And that is why, oh man. So I will say, my first thought, when they first panned back to her face and she was full of tears and her face was swollen, I thought, good grief, girl, come on, get it together. And I realized... Oh, crap.
She's,
of course she's sad
she's
for Jamie.
Seeing her husband saying these things
she
to her.
She is dying on the inside, I think. She's... Because in the book... And this is why it took me... Well, a moment or two. When they go back to her, I'm like, you're crying? Dude, I get it. It's sad. But why are you full of tears? It may have been a lot quicker for others. It did take me probably a good 5 to 10 seconds. I was like, I get it. It's sad. I feel bad for Jamie, too. Don't get me wrong. But you don't know Jamie well enough, I don't think, to feel this way. Plus, you already know that he's healed and he's fine. Maybe not psychologically.
He's not fine.
Not psychologically, but physically, he's mended.
No, he's not. He is scarred forever by this encounter.
Not the same thing. You're scarred by it, but I'm saying he's not openly bleeding anymore. He's not going to die from being out there. I'm not saying he didn't come away unscathed. I'm saying he is okay in his own time, relatively.
He's adjusted. That's all I will say. He has adjusted.
But it's not about Jamie.
No.
It is not. And when I realized it wasn't about Jamie, oh, he could have pushed me over with a feather. I'm like, how, not pretty what happened, but how beautifully acted was this scene? It was crazy amazing. And
no, I would agree.
And there was no voiceover, so you really had to look into it. And maybe it's easier for book people, because in the book you can read she talks about Frank this, Frank that, oh my gosh, and this was my husband's face saying these things. In the book it's very blatantly said. Here you had to hopefully catch it. And even I, as a book reader, I still had to Took me about 10 seconds.
No, I agree. As a book reader, I personally enjoy the voiceovers.
I do too.
However,
but we're
I understand the non-book readers are not as
they may not as be as thrilled big as fanned, yeah.
by the voiceovers because they feel like they're being pandered to, that they can figure all of those out with the acting, if the acting is sufficient.
And I would be curious and to I, know and if I anyone... don't
disagree. Because a lot of the voiceovers, I honestly feel like, while I enjoy them because they harken back mm-hmm. to how it feels for me to read, mm-hmm. I feel like they could have gotten that across and that it maybe wasn't necessary. But I'm in still this scene, them.
Viewers know that it's the same actor playing both people. Yes. So it doesn't take rocket scientists to know that, you know, that they recognize the same actor and that the characters look similar. But I'm curious if viewers who have not read the books and don't know the story understand why she is so shaken right away.
No.
Eventually they may not, but I mean right away.
I would say that initially I think that a lot of the thoughts that I've gotten was that it was
about Jamie.
They didn't understand why they used the same actor. And they were like, well, I don't understand. They could have gotten a different actor that maybe kind of resembled him. And I was like, no, you don't get it. In the book, the character looks almost exactly like him. It would have been distracting for book readers to not have casted an actor that was the same one. So they don't get that. And they also don't fully understand the use of the voiceover. I've seen that a lot with a lot of recaps saying, ugh, the voiceovers, I can see that getting annoying later because we don't need it. Because if the right look is used and the right acting is portrayed, then it's not necessary because you can portray a lot of those feelings with looks. Mm-hmm. I get that. But as a book reader, I fully enjoy the voiceover because it to me, like I said, it harkens back to how I felt when I was reading the book the first time.
He does ask her in the book. He asks her if she speaks French, and she says yes, very well. And that's here, too. And then he says, and I may not have translated it correctly, but...
All you need to know is he said prostitute.
He says, il n'y a pas assez de la prostituée en vous. Roughly, there's not enough of a prostitute about you.
Right, and then he follows that up with, you don't rouging look like the type nipples. Of person who rouges your exactly. nipples. And I was like, thanks?
Yeah. He basically gives her two choices. You're either in league with the enemy or you're an empty-headed trollop. And I thought, what a great choice.
No, when she said that, she's like, are those really my only choices? And then he was like, unless you can think of a third, in which case I'm open to hearing it. And then
she starts on this long tale, this affair of the heart. I literally wrote, oh my gosh, was this not a bit melodramatic?
No. No, I totally agree.
His reactions are making me laugh so hard. He does not give a crap. And he knows she's lying out of her booty.
Well, he's known from the second he walked in that room, she was lying.
And he's
I think he's honestly amused by it. Really? Keep going. What else you got for me?
Exactly. He puts his hand up to his face delicately like he has a headache or something. He's just... And then he calls her on it. He's like, okay, what's his name? Oh, I'm sorry. I can't give you his name. It would just besmirch him.
No, but the really? Whole thing I was like... Here's what I will say for Claire in the series. She is not being described as having a glass face so much as she is in the book. In the book, she doesn't try to lie as much as she does on the show. Because she knows she really can't. Knows she's really crap at it. Mm-hmm. Like, that is not her special skill. Many people have special skills. Hers is medicine, not lying. So she rarely tries to lie. So for her to be so actively trying to create this existence wherein these lies happened is comical to the book readers because we know that the Claire from the books is really crap at lying. But lead to her for the sheen of tears in her eyes.
Oh, And then he starts to sketch her. I thought, what was the purpose? Well, except to name it Beautiful Lies or something. Beautiful Liar. What was the whole purpose?
I'm not going to lie. I thought he was writing up a broadsheet. Like, saying, look for so-and-so. He's a douchebag. Whereas you obviously assumed he was drawing something. I didn't even go there.
No, I didn't know it was a drawing until he looked up and looked down. Looked up and looked down. But then he showed it, and it was like, it was a picture of her. But I also wrote...
Was it a picture of her? Hold on. I didn't see that
it was
her.
It was manly. That's all I'm gonna say.
It was not a picture of her. And she was like, you've drawn my likeness. I know. And I was like, really?
Couldn't they
have
hire...
Have you not seen the mirror?
Either Tobias is a sketch artist or can sketch, and they just wanted to allow him to do it to have fun for giggles and not insist upon having someone who was really good.
That was straight up shiggles. That was shiggles. That was shiggles. That was not even giggles.
They could have had someone, obviously. He could have faked it. They could have had someone do a really good job. Not, like, overly detailed, but really get her actual features. Because she looked kind of manly in that photo, in that picture.
It did not look like her.
It did not. It looked very square jaw manly. So then during this time, he knows about Dougal being a Jacobite. There's all kinds of low, ominous music during this exchange. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And I wrote, oh my gosh, there she goes, opening her mouth again about Jamie. She calls him the Highland Boy. And then he starts talking about that Highland Boy was a thief and a murderer, right? And then another change from the book. We hear that actually a corporal administered the first 100 lashes, and Randall only did the second 100. And when he says that he was a thief and tried to escape and then he was punished for it, I wrote, this is Les Mis again. I don't know if you were referring to this, but this is
a loaf of bread. I was like, no.
Jean Valjean. Not just loaf of bread, but also he tried to escape and got more, not more time, but got punished for it. And when they revealed his back, I wrote, oh, his back. Ew, it was not pretty.
No, but they started the whole scene showing his bloodied shirt. And I was like, oh.
It was a lot.
They showed his bloody shirt and I was like, oh, that's unfortunate. Maybe it was just, you know, a little leftover. And then they took his shirt off and I was like, oh, good God.
When Randall says, I prefer to work on a blank canvas. Yeah. Remember this line because it will go in tandem with something that he says later on. And I did look it up in the book because you said it had been slightly changed. And I thought, well, it sounds pretty familiar. And some of the wording had been changed. So Jamie says, when Randall's like, are you shaking because you're afraid, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And Jamie says, I'm just afraid I'll freeze stiff before you're done talking. In the book, it's no, but I'm afraid I'll freeze to death before you're done talking.
I remember death, and he said stiff in the yes. series.
And then when he tells Claire that the sight of the whip coming down on the flesh, quote, made my stomach flutter and my legs shake, he was totally into it. That was not nervousness or being afraid or shocked at what you were capable of. That was being into it. Like, okay. Butterflies of interest.
Go back a second. Mm-hmm. When she started talking about the Highland Boy and yes. hearing about it at Leoc, I couldn't help but think, oh my God, he's going to know that's where he is. He's going to find
that's
him.
That's what I thought too. I was like, oh Lord.
I was like, shut up, Claire.
That's what I said.
Stop.
She opens her mouth.
Telling him where to
she
find him.
She continues to be naive. And when he first flogs him and that blood just starts to run down right away, I was like, whoa, that was some good special effects. Wow.
No, and that's probably when the first time I stopped watching, like, that I started covering. I was watching it on my tablet, but I reached my hand up and I just literally, like, covered most of the screen with my hand so that I could just kind of make it out and hear what was going on, but I didn't have to see it. But, like, when the blood was literally running down his back in rivulets with all of the map of scabs and wounds left from the previous whipping, I was just like, I just can't. And I literally watched the next, like, probably 10 minutes through, like, fingers. My hand.
And I know, okay, I did not recognize this person at first. Did you recognize this person at first or only after you saw the clips?
All I'm going to say about it is that when this scene started, I was looking for him because he's supposed to be there.
Did you already know that, or you mean in the books or in the story?
In the books. Okay. In the books, Brian Fraser,
Jamie's
father, is present at the second beating. We know this from the books. So when the scene started,
I don't know yet.
When the scene started, I was physically looking for him.
And I was not.
Agreed. And it wasn't until
the credits
that I was vindicated in looking for him because he was listed in the credits. Brian Fraser was listed in the credits. And then I had to go back and watch again.
And
found him.
As sad, I mean, I had tears in this episode. Yes, I cried. But as sad as it was, as hard as it was to watch Jamie go, because we love Jamie because we've been with him for 15 plus years now. As sad as it was to see this on film and as hard as it was to watch because it was someone, a character that you loved, I can't say too much because we're not going to get ahead of this book or even later in the book. But for some reason, the character of Brian Fraser and knowing that the next 8 books and what happens, he tugs at my heart like almost no one else.
He's a tragic figure.
Oh my gosh. He's such a tragic figure.
I mean,
Jamie's a tragic figure, but he's a hero. But his father is like, oh.
He's a tragic figure because by the time we start the series, he's already dead.
That's true. That's not a secret necessarily.
And there is a prequel in the works, so we will get to know him. But in the course of the books we have so far, we do not get to know him on a personal level that we do the rest of the characters. He's such a tragic character because when the book starts, he is no longer
around. Yes.
So we don't get to know him. So he's a tragic figure. And we know from the books that he is present at the second flogging.
Yeah, that's what we'll say. Absolutely.
Okay. So I personally was looking for him. But I did think that when
Captain Randall went out of his way to say that Dougal was present, mm-hmm. that perhaps they were going to try to interchange them, but I still looked for him.
Oh, you thought maybe they might take that out?
I hoped they wouldn't because it's so important.
That would have been terrible.
So important. I thought that they might, but the fact that they went out of their way to say that Dougal was there and to show him, that I thought maybe they were trying to get around that, but I was pleasantly...
content that they hadn't
changed Well, my it? Point is when the credits rolled and I saw his name, I was like, yes! And then I went back and looked for him again.
So Randall also says, talking to Claire, speaking with Claire, describes the whip and how he felt about it and using it. The sheer judder of the whip coursing up my arm, exploding into my heart. I mean, hello. And you can take from the context what it, you can get what it means, but judder is to vibrate with intensity.
Okay, all I'm going to say about this whole thing is this was very reminiscent to me of the television show Hannibal, which is basically told from the point of view of someone who gets in the mind of serial killers. So, and most of his descriptions of things that happen are, this is my design, this is my creation, this is what I have done. And so when Blackjack comes back and he says, you know, this boy and I created this masterpiece, I was just like, ugh. Just gave me like the heebs, like the heebie-jeebies. I was like, oh man.
Okay, this to me was one of the most effective glimpses of anything in this entire episode. And so far in the series, they showed no gore except for the blood that was already on the ground or on the
wood. It was like being like slowly sprayed on the ground, like a squirt bottle was like it was just like misting off of his back. It was awful.
Yes, but what I'm trying to say is, without showing anything like that happening, just the view of his boots, not dancing, but slipping, trying to gain purchase on that bloody ground, and then they pan to Brian again. And I thought, oh, Lord have mercy. I think they panned to him twice, two good shots of him. Wow. But the crowd laughs after one of the soldiers faint. And I thought, very, very interesting. Very interesting. Because this made Blackjack, Randall, committed to, quote, bleed him to the bone. It's not that he didn't want to do him harm and do his masterpiece or whatever before this happened. But when he heard the laughter, the attention was taken away from him. And he's like, uh-uh, you get your attention back here. And he made sure that they did not laugh again.
Well, I mean, you have to understand, as much as it was about bleeding this Highland boy, if you will, definitely not a boy, definitely a man in my book, as much as this was about bleeding Jamie, it was also very much so about putting on a show for the Scots in the area to show them that this is not something that's okay. And if you do this and you go against us, this is what will happen. And the second they start laughing, he had to take it up like 12 notches.
He says that once the crowd laughed and he was yelling at them saying, hey, you know, whatever, basically bring your attention back over here. He says to Claire, or he says about that time, about that thing, he was going to, quote, bleed him. He decided at that point to bleed him to the bone. And I wrote, this seems to be, tell me if I'm wrong, another change from the book. Not just the whole guy, not people laughing, not just people laughing and the guy fainting. That's different. Fine. But the fact that it was either someone laughing, even though we weren't laughing at him, either this, he's in this moment, in this artistic whatever, frenzy, and then there's this laughter that breaks his moment, and he's like, uh-uh, I am going to do this, and by dang it, you guys are going to... I don't know if that tweaks him or turns him. Not into a sadist. He's already that.
No.
But what I'm trying to say is, it shows, I'm not saying for the rest of the book, but in this time, that was motivation for him to go further.
Okay, I won't disagree with that. What I will say about the books is that for Blackjack Randall, pain is a sexual tool. So for him being driven to cause more pain because somebody laughs is not completely in character. It still works.
I agree.
It still works, but for Blackjack Randall of the books, it was purely a sadistic sexual connotation.
And if you look at the laughter thing, I don't think it was because they laughed, per se. I think it was because he was taken out of that moment. And maybe he felt robbed.
I could see that.
Robbed of that perfect encapsulation of from beginning to end to do what he wanted to do. Not that he didn't want to do a ton to him already.
Like a coitus interruptus, if you will.
A flagellus interruptus.
All of it. My point is like something you're working like towards that. Something and somebody just takes you out of it and you're like, dang it, I need to get back in that moment and the only way I can do it is to just
go harder.
Right.
and to
and push
get back in that time because yeah. I have to get my headspace.
No,
again.
I got you.
And you actually brought this up, but I did see it. You actually brought this up, and I was like, yeah, I think there may have been. And on the second and third watch, I was like, I think there was someone of African descent in there.
Yeah, no, that
I
guy.
Like, I was like, oh my gosh, that's pretty awesome. I don't know, because we don't know the character's name, if there was a reason for him being there.
He doesn't have a name. He was just true. A random extra, but still, number 71A.
That was pretty cool, though. To be that extra, you're going to stick out. That's pretty awesome. For the time.
No, for sure.
Then he says, Randall says, of the people in the crowd, all they could see was the horror. I could see the beauty. And that's where I wanted, that's why I wanted you to remember what he said before about the canvas.
Bastard.
And then.
Sick bastard.
Not at the garrison, but at back with Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we see her eyes. Well, one of the times we see her face puffy and right. She's totally crying. And then he smirks. I wrote, so this is how they will introduce his quote-unquote connection with Jamie. Not that he doesn't have this sadistic sexual connection mm-hmm. because of whatever. But because, and I think this is what they're going to say, and I bet they bring it back to this. He feels, in the series... He feels
they forged they a connection
shared
right
something special. They created a masterpiece together, he says. Think about it. This is another change from the book.
No,
not that
for
he
sure.
didn't feel... I mean, who knows
no,
if the
like
guy in the
I
book
said,
had something.
This made it way more Hannibal for me than it was before. Like, this made it, like, straight, like, sociopath for me.
And I think maybe... it's a very interesting choice. It's not a... I don't think it's a bad change at all.
Like
it's not even really a change of the character.
No,
it's just a different motivation.
No, it still works.
His 100%. Connection to Jamie in the series is because they had a moment.
They did have a moment.
A creative moment. A sadistic, nasty, bloody, creative moment.
Correct.
In the books, it's a little different. He could definitely have used this as a reason. But the reason in the book, number one, he did it twice, so that was, he got off even more. But in the book, he is an equal opportunity sadist.
Yes.
Those may not be Diana's words.
He's omnisexual.
All about that.
He'll take them all. He's not, it's not,
both.
It's not about, yeah.
Both.
It's okay, not
all.
About whether it's a dude
only
or a chick.
Captain,
it's just whoever he can cause pain to.
Only Captain Jack Harkness is actually omnisexual.
We like him.
We do.
Okay,
he literally does aliens.
So during the scene,
Torchwood.
Like several things crossed my mind. One, his back. Like seriously, there were chunks of it
hanging. Yeah.
It was worse than his shirt that took 30 tries to rip off his back. It was just like hanging. His back skin was hanging in tatters. Couple that with the fact that everyone on that platform was slipping in his blood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he did, too, at the end. I wonder if that was...
an accident or
yeah.
on purpose? I don't know. But everybody was slipping in Jamie's blood by the end. And I was just like, oh, God. Like, this was the second time in the episode I had to cover my eyes. Like, I had to keep looking away.
Either these are my words or they're actually Randall's words. But I think they're true either way. This, he says, or at least he feels, most likely, Randall about... That whole experience was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen. And then, I mean, hello, she still does. It's all because of the face of Frank. It has to be the face of Frank, the face of Frank, the face of Frank. So Claire starts to speak of his soul. This is also new. We didn't hear anything like this by anyone about Black Jack's soul until a much later book, and that's all I'm going to say. So at first I was confused why Claire, and we already said this kind of, why Claire would care so much. Not that she doesn't feel awful for Jamie and what he's been through, but then we see her looking at Randall, and this is what we said earlier. He's talking about how he's changed, and I realized, again, that she's hearing these awful, awful words and seeing this tortured, supposedly, tortured, wounded, sadistic man speak out of a mask that is her husband's face.
No, for serious, like, oh, and I wrote down here,
she's
I was
just,
like, I said, oh, Claire, stop looking for light in his darkness. And that was one of the things they were saying is, like, she's like, you know, this doesn't have to be the end. You can fix this if you just start
stop
over.
It, Claire,
and I'm like,
give it
stop,
up.
Stop looking for something redeeming in this man.
Exactly.
He is not
your husband.
No, he's not your husband, and there is no redemptive quality left in him. Mm-mm. And he'll admit that to you later. But right now, you need to understand that you are trying to find something
she's
in
on
him
a fool's
that
errand.
No longer
it's
exists.
Not, yeah. So he says he does reddish work. I thought,
no,
what a beautiful line. I looked it up, and it can't, obviously, red's the color of blood. It can describe bloody work. But I found that it is, I'm not saying it's the only use of it, but a very famous quote from The Crucible by the character Abigail,
mm-hmm.
who's the naughty one, right? Yeah. Abigail, who had seen her parents slaughtered by the Indians, the Native Americans, she says, she has seen some reddish work done at night. And, you know, the crucible was written, although of a real event that happened in American history, it was written kind of as a response to the congressional witch hunts.
Yeah.
And so to say reddish work, actually, in the crucible has two meanings. Reddish is in bloody, and reddish is in quote-unquote commie or communist.
Agreed. And the other thing that I noticed that and this is a credit to Tobias's acting.
You were saying something else.
I know. Is the fact that he actually appeared to be fatigued by his own horror. Like, he was just like, I am almost exhausted by the lengths to which I go to find this peace or solace. Like, his his horror in what he does. Like, he's like, I see it. I see how awful this is, but it's all that I know, and it's all that I want.
And I wrote, poor Claire. And then again, I said the exact same thing in our episode when I said, poor Claire. At least one time I said, no, not the nuns. There are nuns called poor Claires. Poor Claire sees him as, and she talks about it, and she uses these words. She sees him as a casualty of war, and maybe he is in part. Who knows?
She sees PTSD in him.
Exactly. She feels for him as a healer, as someone who's also been around combat. She's seen many young men tortured by war. As I didn't think about it earlier when I started saying, she's too naive here. Claire is a little bit too kumbaya for me. It's too much. Mm. By this point, I'm like, girl, get it together. Stop. It's not Frank. Well,
put your big girl panties on and stop trying to see.
I don't think they wore panties back then. But
they wore something.
They wore shifts. But if you've read the books, you know Kumbaya can't remain.
No.
Kumbaya Claire. That's her nickname this episode, Kumbaya Claire.
No, it's like she so desperately wants him to be Frank that she's trying to look past the fact
that she's looking for anything. Talk about drawing for straws.
No,
she's trying anything.
And the way he said this, like, totally caught me off guard every time he says it, when she's like, you know, you could look past this and do better things. And he's like, it would be pretty to think so.
I love that line.
And it was just, something about the way he said it and the phrasing of it that totally stuck out to me, and not in a bad way, but it just stuck out that it would just, like, hit home with me, it would be pretty to think so. Because even he himself is stating, oh, that's a nice fairy tale, but, you know, that's really not reality.
Every time I read this scene in the book, I know what's going to happen. It still freaks me out and surprises me. I knew this was coming, but they really timed that punch perfectly.
They did. But before we start,
it startled me.
Before I say that, she makes some comment about, you know, you can be, you know, become better. The man you want to be.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, he is the man he wants to be.
Yeah.
He is fully committed to being the man he wants to be.
And continuing making masterpieces.
Exactly. You are on a fool's errand if you're trying to turn him into what you want him to be, which is Frank, and he will never be Frank.
But that punch. I mean, and then her, ooh! And he totally, like, took the wind out of her, I'm sure.
He punched her right in her baby maker.
Plus, in the womb.
Oh, he just, like, got her, like, right in the middle.
Not the kachachi, yeah. But the womb.
Not inside of her vagina, no.
No, well, that's a kind of a baby maker, but her womb.
He got her, like, right in, like, her solar plexus. Like.
He got her diaphragm, because that's why she had the wind knocked out of her. And she, like, full-on, whoa, Katrina, great job. I mean, wow. And then she, like, she falls to the floor. She doubles over.
Naturally. Because, like, yeah. I said, oh. most... And this and is what's so strange. And oh. I've said this not on the podcast, but I've said it previously, like... And I hate to say it, like, women are... Not that we're used to being slapped, but we would expect to be slapped as women. But you punch a woman and they're going to be a little, like, off guard by the whole thing.
Well, I don't expect to be slapped, but if someone's going to be violent, you would I would expect that before a punch.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's like whereas with a dude, like, they expect to be punched. Like, if you want to see an outraged man, like, slap him. They're like, what? You slap me? And it's like the total opposite for women. It's like we expect that, like, slap me, and then they, like, punch him. They're like, what? You punched me?
But for the record, I don't expect to be slapped by anyone.
Agreed.
That will be met with Claire Bear stare.
Claire Bear stare?
Yeah, I said it before. It's not new. Again, even though we know it's coming at some point, it's...
No, but again...
Still. But he helps her up,
and then he punched her.
Full on comes back, and she's getting up like, oh, he's helping me out.
No, and he's like, this is a strange feeling, doing something nice for someone.
It's awful.
And then she's like, oh, it's so... And then he punched her right in the...
No warning at all. He totally... And then... She falls down, and then he kind of, like, lets her go a little bit more, and she, like, slams into the floor, and then he's like, Corporal Hawkins, have you ever kicked a woman? I'm like, you are not going to kick her. What well, the heck? Well,
to be honest, in the books, he had Corporal Hawkins come in and hold her still.
While he punched her.
While he punched her.
But they didn't kick her.
No, but they also didn't have anyone hold her while he punched her. So it was a way of bringing Corporal Hawkins back into the mix without... I understand that,
but...
Without him coming in and...
The whole point is they added more violence.
Oh, of course they did. And poor Corporal Hawkins, at least this Corporal Hawkins, this incarnation of Corporal Hawkins, he didn't want to kick her. But he was more afraid of Black Jack Randall than he was of not doing what he asked.
And I wrote, Claire will never be Kumbaya Claire again. She'll never make the mistake of trusting this man ever again. Imagine her horror that this Frank lookalike is doing this to her. Not just what he said, the conversation they had, but not only is her body being beaten, but her mind and heart must be shattering. And then, of course, Corporal Hawkins is brought over, and it's almost funny. You can see the struggle on his face as he protests. He's like, but, sir. And he ends up kicking her, like, almost like, meh. I mean, he's like, I'll do it a little bit, but, you know, yeah, not fully.
He was not committed to the first kick.
And then
when he realized that he was going to get his butt kicked if he didn't kick her right, he was like, fine, I'll do this.
But
the Corporal Hawkins in the book was like, a D-I-C-K. Like, he was not
necessarily a nice guy.
He was not a nice guy. He was totally just like, whatever you want me to do, I'm going to do it.
I wasn't happy that he did it. But I also did have a moment of feeling bad for Corporal Hawkins because, like you said, you could see the struggle on his face.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, basically, sir, how could I do that? I can't do that. This is a lady.
Like, have you ever kicked a woman? And he was like, sir? No.
What? But then when he decides to do it, his face changes. And he kind of gets into it a little bit. His face does change. And then I think he's a little freaked out that he actually did it. But his face goes from, what? The circle on his face, you see it? And then when he finally is like, determined to do it, he changes. And I'm like, that's scary. And then, da-da-da, Dougal to the rescue.
Right, that's what I said. I said, here's Dougal.
Things move very fast now.
Oh, for sure.
The words Dougal needs to hear. You have no right to that woman. She's an English subject. He's like, got it. I can take care of that. And at that threat, if she's not brought, and the threat that if she's not brought to Fort William by sundown the next day, he'll be accused, basically, of harboring a fugitive of English law.
Yes. And what I wrote here was that, to quote Kenny Rogers, BJR knows when to hold him, knows when to fold him, knows when to walk away, and knows when to run. So BJR... as much of a sadist as he is, knows when he's been outmaneuvered, and he was definitely outmaneuvered by Dougal McKenzie in the scene.
But he had no idea what was going to come. So he's like, sure, take her. I'll see you tomorrow.
Well, it's like everyone else. They spend this entire series underestimating the Scots.
Of course.
So they fed into this belief that they are not... that they are not their intellectual equals, and that is so far from the case.
I wonder if the scene, the location that they chose for St. Ninian Spring was filmed at the fairy poles in the sky. One of the shots at least looked like images I've seen of the fairy poles in the sky. Maybe not.
But it was before the fairy poles, when they're like riding across the countryside.
Well, it's not called the fairy pole.
I know, but she's like, my body was still reeling from the mistreatment. And I was like, that's putting it mildly.
I almost wrote that. Mistreatment? Excuse me? Okay. So I love the scene, but it was sad. The one thing I was sad about losing from this scene, and I understand that because of the changes they made, and it's, you know, fine. It's, I think the episode was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I'm not complaining about the episode. But I am not going to lie, I was a little bit sad we didn't get to see this, because as we talked about, I think Teresa joined us for this episode, if I'm not mistaken. This was Dougal's scene. This was his big scene. Not in the series, but in the book. When he talked about... remember, when they're at the spring, he talks about himself, he talks about Jamie. This is before the marriage is even announced.
Like, he's trying to paint the picture of Jamie as honestly as he can because of what's come.
But this whole scene is gone.
But not only that, but the thing, what I also thought that was different, and the biggest thing for me that was different, was the fact that he drank first.
Mm.
And in the books, she walked right up to the water and took a drink, and he was like, okay. And that was different in this. In this, he kind of took a drink and he was like, you know, oh, it smells bad, but go ahead and take a drink. It's good. It's good for you. So he kind of like leads the scene where he takes a drink and then she takes a drink. So it was a little different from the books.
yes, we lost a little bit of that dialogue, but we...
A lot of it.
Yeah.
Almost all of it.
But a lot of that stuff could come up later. Like, it could be expressed while she's in her cups, which is coming.
That is true. But it's important, if they have it, the whole purpose of it was to get to know him a little bit, but it's his exposition on Jamie.
I agree with you, but by leaving it out, it made it so much more of a meaningful choice when she goes, well, who do you mean then? And then all of a sudden, it was a switch to the scene where she's sitting out in that field holding the marriage contract, mm-hmm. and Jamie saunters up with two cups and that flask. Mm-hmm. So I thought that
was nicely done.
For the purpose of the episode, I thought it worked better to not give so much backstory for Jamie at that point.
So before he announces anything, and she says, you've been talking to Ned Gowan. And he says, I thought it might come to this. Now, it may not be the exact same line, but I had the same thought, the same feeling, the same ideas from the book. They may not know exactly what's going to happen, but the fact, and I think it's in the book too, the fact that he says, I thought it might come to this. Thought it might come that we have to make you a Scotswoman.
Right.
And so we needed a man around who was not married.
Agreed.
I mean, granted, there was Rupert and there were others. There are possible, I'm just saying, possibilities. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Jamie was there to help raise money for the Jacobite cause.
Agreed.
And also to marry him off,
which took several purposes.
And you find out more after the marriage.
Agreed.
A lot more purposes.
And can we talk about the fact that Dougal said the idea of grinding your corn?
No, he says, the idea of grinding your corn does tickle me.
No, it does, but I was just like, grinding your corn?
That was the best.
I've never heard that.
It was the best line of the night.
It was definitely
like, go
funny.
Dougal. For some reason, not Dougal, but Graham McTavish as Dougal. I can't get over him saying things like that. It's just
so funny.
It's wrong, but amazingly funny.
And I mean, obviously, we aren't like super bosom buddies with any of these people, but it's like the brief moment in time that we, you know, talk to these people on the red carpet.
Like you talked about grinding her corn.
I can't reconcile these people with the lines sometimes, but grinding your corn, I definitely wrote that down.
The last episode, he had some lines. He was some foulness.
I know, Paps.
But that was the best line of the night. And still no mention of Dougal's wife.
No.
That was a perfect time to say, sorry, lass, I'd like to grind your corn. Alas, I'm a married man. There's someone else I have in mind. I mean, you could just put it in there.
No, I agree. I thought it was weird to not mention it.
Exactly.
So we'll have to see where that leads.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote, enter Jamie, ...
The
drinking begins.
No, I wrote, so who is it? ... The poor Highlander boy.
Boy is in quotation marks. That is not a boy.
It's a man. Comes over the small hill to sit with her and brings her drink. And she's overlooking the marriage contract. And then I wrote, in all caps, straight from the books. Thank you, Ron. Ira, Diana, et al. The whole version thing, weeping from happy. His delivery is... I didn't expect the phrasing the way... I thought it was going to be something like, do you mind that I'm not a virgin? And then my brain wanted to fill in, no, as long as you don't mind that I am or that I am. He had none of those beats.
No.
He said it so... Just pretty much straight.
No, but
and I thought, oh, how nice was
but
that?
What was so lovely about it was that when she said that, you could see him literally turn and see how far the other people were away from him. And
yep.
Then he turns back and he's like, all right. And then the jokester comes back, which is what I so enjoy about his portrayal of Jamie is all the nuances he gives to the character.
So
it's
many
not
layers.
Just like,
no, so many layers.
It's not just like, hey, I'm Jamie and this is the one thing I do. It's like, I am this multifaceted, so many colors to the rainbow that is Jamie that I'm just,
people were upset. Okay, in every single episode we see Jamie, people are very happy, right?
I'm very happy.
People were upset last episode that they didn't have much of him. I mean, then earlier on, the one where the stable, the gathering, they didn't see him like for the first half hour. I get it.
Well, I was upset that he was bleeding through most of this episode.
Got it. But you also have to understand that in the books, he's not that much of a main character until after the marriage.
Agreed.
And so, from here on, actually, from episode 107 on,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be the Jamie and Claire show.
And which is how it should
pretty
have been
much
the
for,
whole time.
For everything.
Though for me,
on.
It's always been the Jamie and Claire show. And anytime he shows up, it's the Jamie show because I will pause it and make it all about Jamie.
And the best thing ever, and I hope they open with it, I hope they just don't finish it. But the best, well, there were a few great things, but the best thing besides the whole virgin scene line being played perfectly and beautifully was in the end, she comes up and she steals his bottle of whiskey and she takes off toward the inn, we think. And I wrote, Claire goes to get drunk. Yes.
Right. Well, she started in the scene where he showed up.
She already started.
And did you please notice his face? Like, when she kind of walks through the group of them, he's just like, meh, I don't know what to tell you. Mm-hmm.
Loved it. He's like, look, I'm not, she's not mine yet.
He was just like,
I'm not, I can't do anything.
And you can't see this, but I'm shrugging my shoulders. Like, he was just like, I don't know.
Again, she's not mine yet. Can't do anything about it. Exactly. Let her, she's going to do what she's going to do.
No, it was just, such a...
Oh my gosh.
So well played.
Like. And a shout out to Brian Fraser, played by Andrew Whip. We didn't hear ya. We hardly knew ya.
We'll learn more about ya.
We'll learn more about ya. Hopefully they keep things as they are in the book a little bit, and we see you in another flashback, because that's important.
I think if they named him at all, it's coming
it's
back.
It's going to come back.
It has to.
But I think that flashback, what we're talking about, happens when they get to Lallybroch.
Oh,
right?
Of course. Okay. I think so.
That's probably around 10 or 11 later. Around there. But anyway, yes, so a fascinating, fascinating episode. And so we are 1 week away.
I don't even want to talk about it. Wedding. I can't take it. What I will say is that I loved / hated this episode.
Oh, I just
which
loved
I think
it.
You're supposed to.
I loved it.
Well, I know, I get it. I love it because of all that it included, but I hated having to watch it. I know, but I hated having to watch it.
I hear you. I hear you.
I'm like, I knew it had to happen, and I've read the books. I know what's coming. I know what's come before. I know what's in the planning stages. But still, seeing it was really hard for me at some point.
It becomes much clearer later on when certain things happen. But I don't think it's a spoiler to say Jamie is a Christ figure. And it may be too early to actually have direct evidence of that. But the flogging, that's all I'm going to say. That was pretty much a scourging. That's one of the first times that, the whole theme of an innocent man being jailed or being imprisoned. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that obviously... that haven't happened yet, but that fall into that being a Christ figure thing. Mm-hmm. It's just starting, people. It's just starting. So, yeah. So, thank you so much for listening. We've had a fabulous, wonderful time speaking about stuff that it's finally on its way to becoming the Jamie and Claire show.
It's hitting the fan, y'all.
It is. And next week, it will be awesome, awesome.
Please join us for a wedding.
Yes. And I think we have a guest next week.
Our friend of the show, Lene, will be joining us for the
wedding.
And I don't
think there's going to be much horsey talk.
It depends on exactly what you mean by horseplay.
Depends on what they keep from the book.
We'll see.
In the wedding
night. We shall definitely see. So, but yeah. as many of you longtime listeners know, Lene was around when we got to the consummation episode of the read-along.
And so we wanted to
bring her back to...
For the next consummation.
For the next consummation so that we keep a little status
and
quo.
And this is why, not only is it a great thing because they're getting married, blah, 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 the story is actually finally starting to get to the couple. The thing is, yes, there are 7 more books after this, and there's more than half a book left, equivalency of this. There are many, many, many ups and downs and beautiful things that Claire and Jamie go through. Wonderful, difficult, all of that. That are very enjoyable. But there's only this one time in this first book, in any of the books, obviously, that they get married. And so this is something, even though their characters don't know each other very well and it's like stumble through this together, It is where everything is built from.
Well, I think what's more important to say than even that is the fact that everyone who's been complaining that there haven't been nearly enough boobs or butts or sex scenes shown in the course of the series, I promise you, is starting.
Pretty much, because there was
your Game of Thrones show you're
either.
Expecting is coming.
Well, I don't even know if they go that far. It won't. I'll put it this way: from what we understand, it's not gratuitous. If it's in the books, they pretty much kept it as far as the sex scene.
If it's plot driven. Derivative, then absolutely it's going to be there. And knowing the plot, it's there from here on out.
Yeah.
But before she goes back through the stones, it was just her and Frank. So once she was put back with the Scots, there's a lull. Before, you know, because she's the good upstanding lady, our Claire. So
and
until
a good
exactly, and
Catholic
she loved,
boy.
And she was, you know, completely devoted to her husband. So as soon, Frank. So as soon as the new wedding happens, you know, things change. So I think that the people who've been complaining there haven't been enough gratuitousness. I think it's coming.
So that wraps up our discussion of episode 106, The Garrison Commander. Next week. dun dun dun, or dun 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 dun. Okay, the wedding.
Oh my goodness, I have so many words to say, but I can't. We can't say anything. I mean, the title gives it away what happens, and after you've seen tonight's episode, there's no more spoilers. You know what's going to happen, and now you know the reason why. We're so excited. We're going to be joined by a friend of the show, Lene.
She's not here for the horsey talk.
She's not here for the horses. She may be coming for the merewinks, though.
Whoa. No, I think she's coming for the bedroom talks.
Yeah,
for the consummation talks.
That is oh so true. There will be much consummation next week, we hope. So thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night that my young